And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Leyland.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Once again, we're going to journey through the wormhole to see what lies on the other side, away from Deep Space Nine. For that is our mission, to chart every single episode of the show, probably for the next 14 years. I'm Andrew Leyland, and I am joined, as ever, by my illustrious cohort, Mr. Paul Spataro.
Hello.
And Mr. Sean Engel.
Rock climbing, folks.
If that doesn't give away what he thought about the show, you can turn off now. Do we have anything before we get into this one? Do we have any Star Trek related news we wish to talk about?
One of the things that I saw online is they've been recently releasing a lot of these Star Trek miniatures of the ships and the lines of the Federation, and one of the ones that they came out recently was the sort of revamped runabout line. So I'm certain if you are into collecting the little ships and the little detailed ones, there's a version of the runabout from Deep Space Nine out there. So if you want to go check that out, see if they might have that on Amazon and use the link through Two True Freaks to go buy it, that'd be a cool thing to do. Also, it's coming near Christmas. In fact, by the time this comes out, it should be right around Christmas time. So I'm wondering what I don't know if they have it over in the UK, but over here in the States, we've got these Hallmark stores that are in some malls that have the tendency to have Christmas ornaments that are Star Trek and Star Wars based. And I'm wondering what the ship design that they're going to be putting out this time. Does anyone know anything about that, or has anyone seen what they're going to be putting out this year?
I haven't seen the ship yet. I saw the scene, and I'm trying to remember what it is. I'm thinking it might be Spock and the Horta.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But I'm not 100% sure of that. I have the one I have is the Kirk, Spock, and Captain Pike in the chair.
Oh, that's cool. One of the neat things they do with Hallmark ones is sometimes they have little voice activated ones. So yes, it would be cool if the one with Spock and the Horta was, you know, Spock doing the pain. Well, that's not the line, is it? What is it? It's something about the pain. I don't know. It's been so long since I've watched the, but yeah, that's really all I can think of. I haven't had too much Star Trek-y going on in my life, aside from watching the shows.
Yeah, right now that's same for me. I'm mainly just watching them.
And enjoying them, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
All right, should we get into the episode synopsis then?
Yes, let's do this.
They came from the darkest corner of the galaxy.
First contact is our most important mission.
And they brought with them the games they played.
Chula! Can I win?
Prepare yourself for a new kind of sport.
Four officers have just disappeared.
We're playing for our lives here.
Where to win, you must survive.
Choose their path.
What is wrong with you people?
Next time on Star Trek Space Nine.
Okay, the story for Move Along Home was by Michael Piller. The teleplay was by Frederick Rappaport, Lisa Rich, and Jean Carrigan Fauci. It was directed by David Carson, who went on to direct Deep Space Nine, not Deep Space Nine, the first Next Generation movie, Generations. Trivia fans. It was originally aired on or around the 15th of the 3rd, 1993, or the 3rd, 1593, depending on where you are when you listen to this. The synopsis this time comes from the Deep Space Nine Companion, a Gary by Terry Erdman and Paul LeBlanc. This is normally where Sean and I normally steal our synopsis from, because we're lazy bastards by and large and can't be bothered writing one.
I think you guys step up from where I do, because I stole my last one from Wikipedia. So as lazy
at least
as
ours is from a book.
You might be. I think I'm even worse.
Following a disconcerting conversation with his son about the birds, the bees, and the Ferengi, Commander Sisko heads to one of the docking bays to officially greet a delegation from the Gamma Quadrant. The meeting with the Wadi, as the humanoid species is known, represents the Federation's first formal contact with representatives from the other side of the wormhole, and Sisko is determined that his crew give a good impression, even if Bashir is misplaced his Starfleet dress uniform. However, the Wadi have no interest in either formalities or pleasantries. They're interested in games, and they've heard that Quark's bar is the place to find them. Disappointed, Sisko delivers the party to the Ferengi's establishment, and Quark, motivated by the promise of Wadi gemstones, introduces them to the game of Darbo. When the Wadi win too often, Quark resorts to cheating, but the Wadi catch him at it, and their leader, Fallow, offers Quark the chance to engage in a Wadi game. Quark accepts and is introduced to the game of Chula. Fallow declines to tell Quark anything about the game beyond the fact that he must move his four game pieces through the various levels or shaps of the game board. As Quark begins to play, a peculiar thing happens. The four station representatives who greeted the Wadi, Sisko, Dax, Kira, and Bashir, suddenly find themselves inside a peculiar maze, prompted to move along home by the image of Fallow. And each time Quark moves one of his game pieces to a new shap, the crew encounters a new challenge within the maze. Alerted by Jake that the commander is missing, Odo soon discovers the disappearance of the other three senior officers as well, and he begins to investigate. Sisko and company encounter Chandra, meanwhile, a little girl who is chanting a rhyme while she plays a game that resembles hopscotch. Noticing that there is a door on the other side of the room, the four attempt to get to it, only to be bounced back by a force field. When Dax realizes that Chandra is able to pass back and forth through the field, they repeat her rhyme and emulate her movements and successfully reach the door. Back at the bar, Quark receives a nice pile of gemstones for reaching the third shap, and Fallow tells him he can double his winnings by doubling the peril of the game pieces. Odo arrives to ask if Quark knows anything about the four senior officers. Remembering that he has four game pieces, Quark glances at Fallow, and something in the Wadi's expression tells Quark that he's playing for more than gemstones. Alarmed, Quark chooses the safer path for his pieces. In the maze, the four other officers face another challenge and successfully reach the fourth shap, while in the bar, Quark receives more jewels. Suspicious, Odo leaves the bar and has a security officer beam him over to the Wadi ship, where they have picked up a strange energy reading. But Odo has barely begun his investigations when he finds himself back in Quark's bar. Certain that the Wadi game has something to do with the crew's disappearance, Odo orders the game stopped, but Fallow states that stopping the game will cause Quark to lose the players. Quark continues, but an unfortunate roll of the dice causes Bashir to be swept away from the others by a swirling energy field. As Fallow removes a game piece, Quark opts to take the remaining pieces on a shortcut, which he hopes will make the game end more quickly. But the move results in the loss of another game piece, and within a cavernous portion of the labyrinth, Dax injures her legs. Sisko and Kira refuse to leave her behind, despite the threat of an impending earthquake. The heroic gesture is to no avail, however. The three fall helplessly into an abyss, and find themselves at Quark's place, along with Bashir. Fallow tells them that although Quark lost, his players were never in any real danger since they were, after all, only playing a game. Mm-hmm. And we've killed the episode.
I think this episode killed itself, honestly.
Oh!
I'm sorry, I was muted. I want to take the lead on this because I'm not going to be completely, Godzilla ranty, but I'm not going to have favorable things to say about this. This was an episode that I remember from the first season when I watched it initially going, what the hell is going on? It looks like they had a significantly reduced budget. They were reusing sets a lot in the thing. The idea of this game that transports them into the ship that is that Quark's playing this, and the senior officers are now in peril, but not in peril. The goofy nature of the look of the aliens, they look at like they just stepped off a bad 80s porn shoot with the mullets and the goofy head tattoos. None of the characters seem like they were actually enjoying themselves. Even Quark, who I've enjoyed through this, had a miserable scene where he's sitting there begging for them to let him play, you know, change the play ever, because he's afraid that he might have killed off one of these people. And
please.
Yes. Oh, and the final ultimate thing, and this is for me being a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, was that the end of the episode, there's rock climbing. And if you know anything about Mystery Science Theater 3000, there's an episode called The Lost Continent where they spend almost 15 to 20 minutes watching these people climb up the side of a mountain.
Rock climbing?
Well, looks like we'll start climbing.
Duh.
It seems we have no alternative.
Joel, why are we watching this dull mountain climbing sequence?
Well, because it's there.
Oh.
Rock climbing, Servo.
Rock climbing.
Rock
Joel.
Climbing.
Rock yeah. climbing, Crow. Cambot, yeah. Rock climbing.
Oh, come on, what is this?
What is it they're looking for?
They forgot. They don't even know.
Come on, God,
this is a madhouse!
Why?
A madhouse!
Oh, I never knew mountain time was so slow.
Please. Kill them all! Kill them! Please,
come on,
kill
hey,
them!
Hey, you guys, calm down. Hey, it's only a movie. We can handle it, okay? Who are you? Where are we? Can we get a frame of reference or something? Please!
Chill.
For no apparent reason. And the fact that they have this at the end of this episode just cements the fact that this is not, for me, an enjoyable episode. But I'm willing to listen to everyone's opinions and hear what you have to say about it. Go right ahead, everyone else.
Should I give the
you go next.
Agreeing opinion, or should I let you counter it first?
Go ahead.
No, you do the agreeing opinion.
Okay, yeah. I spent this entire episode wanting to go over to the leader of the group and just smack him. I just hated the smug look on his tattooed head face. I just could not stand this. You know, you start off the episode with talking about how first contact is so important, and then you just leave them with Quark and don't even monitor what's going on. It was just terrible. And when they realized something was going on, somebody should have pulled a phaser out and put it up to this guy's head and said, "Release our people now or you're dead." You know, it's just like, you know, oh, wait a minute, it's first contact, so let's just let them run loose and do whatever they want and take our people. And then when we realize they have them, we're not going to even really do anything to force them to let them go. No.
Well, and Odo should have done something when he was confronting them in the bar. If he had a suspicion that these characters had taken essentially the senior staff, he should have pulled them away and put them in the brig and
Absolutely.
Interrogated them and, you know, found out where's our commanding officer. But
he should have been sticking bamboo under their fingernails. Come on, he should do some dermabrasion on that guy and get rid of the head tattoo.
I'm certain that was
I found this episode not only to be, last episode I thought was boring, and that was the problem with it. This one I found to be affirmatively annoying. The whole move along home thing just was irritating. The nursery rhyme singing, and when they made Cisco have to do it in a sing song voice, oh, it was just painful to watch. We are not in a strong run of episodes right now. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Defend this.
Tell us why it was good, Andy.
I liked this one. I honestly did. I'm not going to disagree with anything you said. yes, it would have made much more sense to just put a gun to his head and say, release our people. But he could have just countered with, I can't. Once they're in the game, they're in the game. They've got to play it. But let's take into account one thing here. At no point does Alan Moraine bloke, whose name I've forgotten, Fallow, at no point does he say that the Starfleet personnel are in any danger. He studiously goes out of his way to not say that they're in any danger. We assume they are because we're conditioned to think that from watching other TV shows. Quark and Odo assume the crew are in danger, but he never says they are. So technically, he's not done any threatening. Yes, he's put them in a position where they wouldn't necessarily have wanted to be, but Quark agreed to play the game without knowing the rules. So that's on Quark.
Yeah.
Secondly, yeah, it's an episode of Lost in Space. I'm not going to defend it on any conceivable level in terms of its plot and what it looks like. It's Lost in Space. Star Trek. It's goofy and it's campy. But you know, what's wrong with goofy camp? The original show had more than its fair share of goofy, campy episodes. And if I have a problem with later iterations of Star Trek, it's that they took it far too seriously. It's like they were deathly afraid of doing goofy camp because they didn't want it. They wanted it to be seen as being serious all of the time. And this episode's just fun. It's not boring, which is the biggest crime. I can forgive a show trying to do something different. I can forgive a show doing a story that maybe doesn't necessarily work, or an actor doing something with a performance that doesn't quite pay off, if they are genuinely in a show that is interesting. And unlike the one we covered last week, or another one that we've already done that I've probably forgotten the name of, this isn't boring. It's irritating on occasion. It's a bit goofy in places. Yes, Sisko repeating the rhyme is incredibly embarrassing, but I get the impression it's supposed to be embarrassing. There's not enough in that scene made of Kira's reaction. Kira has one little reaction of her face when Nana Visitor has a facial expression that goes, this is f***ing stupid. But we don't get a close-up of it, which I don't know is a directional problem or whatever. But she plays that, even though you don't see it. So they know that this is dumb, but they have to do it to survive. It's no stupider than Plato's stepchildren, is what I'm going to say. The other thing about this was the most expensive episode after the pilot. This one cost them an awful lot of money, and they shaved an awful lot of budget from it, from the original script, because they couldn't afford to do it. So how does it manage to look so ridiculously chintzy?
Yeah, to hear that, that's really surprising, because they're reusing sets. The whole giant maze that the command crew are having to go through seems very, very minimalistic. I mean, it looks like set redressing all over the place. So I don't know how this could be an expensive episode. There aren't that many, aside from ops, the bar, and the scenes on the ship. I don't think there's any other really major, there's no new set designs aside from the ship. So how did this end up costing supposedly so much?
If there's no explanation given in this issue of Cine Fantastique other than it was originally a very highly budgeted episode and they had to chop an awful lot of that to make it work, but it still ended up being incredibly expensive. Oh. But like you, I don't know where they spent the money.
Maybe it was on the rock climbing thing. That was probably it. They were just went totally all out. They created a big 50-foot deep pit that they would fall into, and that was a intense stunt that all the actors had to work themselves up to do. And maybe Dax broke her shoulder doing it, and that's why.
I know I'm in the distinct minority here. At Entertainment Weekly rated this one of the worst episodes ever when they did the final analysis of the show. But I don't find this one disagreeable. But I am... The Cine Fantastique says the writer was inspired by The Prisoner. He wanted to do an episode of The Prisoner called Checkmate, where they're all stood on a big chessboard in the middle of the village and they use real people to move as pieces. And it doesn't quite reach that level of absurdity because the quality of the writing's not as clever as that episode of The Prisoner, which is actually about the electorate. I actually couldn't get an underlying theme from this one, other than Quark's a cheating bastard and he deserves to be punished. So I don't know what underlying theme the writer was going for, other than the obvious. So I don't know what they were inspired by in watching that episode of The Prisoner, because The Prisoner isn't just about the absurdity of the 60s visuals. It's about something. The stories are about something. So it doesn't quite pull off that level of surrealism. But it's not objectionable. Like I said, you know, the original series had Plateau Stepchildren, which is far more embarrassing than this. Next Generation has that episode where Data puts on a bunch of masks and Brent Spiner has to rant for a bit. That's far worse than this is.
I'd say it's in the same class, honestly. And I prefer Plato's Stepchildren.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, there were some, you know, as down as I am on it, there were some moments on it. The opening scene between Jake and Ben was a really good character building scene between the two of them. It reinforces the idea that not only is Sisko a commander of the station, but he's also having to be a father. And, you know, we've commented earlier on the shows that we really enjoy the fact that you have a father and son character or a father and son dynamic running through the show. So I like that scene between him and Cyric Lofton. I thought that was that was one of the better things in this episode.
I agree with that, but like a lot of the opening scenes, it had no nexus to the rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, no other than Jake.
That was a fine moment, but there was nothing that built on.
Without him establishing that he was going to meet Jake the next morning, Jake wouldn't have flagged up to Odo that Sisko was missing.
So it does
kind of figure into the plot. Jake may have got up for school that morning, seen his dad wasn't there, and just thought he'd gone to work early.
Yeah, that
if you hadn't had that opening episode, that opening scene, which was, I agree, probably the strongest character moment in the episode, then you still could have had Jake say, "Oh yeah, I don't know where my dad is," and whenever you didn't need that to go to it. But just the same, I think that was probably the strongest character moment. I also thought, you know, just to try and stay a little bit positive, as I mentioned
in too late.
The last episode, I do think this is the writers finally seeing the cast that they have and the chemistry that they have and the way they're playing their parts and saying to themselves, you know what, this Quark, we could have something here. Let's focus on him a little bit. And I think they missed the mark on this one, but I thankfully don't think they give up on him so quick. And I do think they will quickly find a little bit more of Quark's, you know, to find an interesting Quark. I don't think they mischaracterized him in this episode. I think he was characterized right. They just didn't give him an episode that showcased him in a way that was enjoyable for me. The fact that he's cheating at Dabo, the fact that you know he is looking into this game, like when he starts having fun playing, he's, oh, maybe we can work out some deal to get some tables in the house. You know, that all fits his character well, and I think they are starting to develop him. They just didn't find that episode that was developing him and interesting at the same time.
See, I didn't like the thing of Quark, a person who's supposed to be underhanded, a person who is shown to cheat at games, to enter into a game where he has no idea what the rules are, how to play it, and go so wholeheartedly into it simply because of his love of acquiring wealth. You know, his entire desire to play this game was predicated on the fact that he wanted to get those gemstones that technically could have been completely without value. So he's not only going into this game without knowing the rules behind it, but he's going into it for an idea of profit that may not be profitable simply because it's exotic and from the Gamma Quadrant. That irked me with the character of Quark in this episode.
Yeah, he doesn't really know what he's putting at risk, and I think that's where they make a mistake with him. Quark would always play the odds and know, you know, what he's actually gambling. So that's, I agree that I could see where if he thought there was nothing of value at risk, he might play a game where he didn't know the rules. Just out of, you know, blind greed. He sees something he likes and he wants it. I'll also give Quark the credit for saying he's probably linked into profit enough that he's got a good eye and he sees stones and he knows if they're valueless or not. You know, if they would have a reselling market for them. So I'm not going to totally disparage him for that. The problem I have is he would certainly make a better effort to find out the rules to see if there's something he could exploit or cheat. And he would also, you know, just know what he's putting at risk himself. Plus,
no, I'm not gonna disagree with anything. The plot makes no sense. The story is dopey. It's full of little holes. I just don't think it's awful. I don't think it's as bad as like I say, it's, as long as something's not boring, I can forgive it.
Oh, okay. You know, that makes sense. It is not boring. But I think compared to, and this may be hindsight with us, this may be the fact that we're looking at this from having already viewed all this and going back and reviewing this, knowing the way Deep Space Nine develops and how the show becomes more of a cerebral episode, to have these sort of goofy, like you said, you know, original series type shows where they're just having fun with it, kind of gives us a bad taste because we're expecting more from the show. So that could be another reason why we're viewing it in such a negative manner.
That, and I just honestly, I just found this whole alien crew to be just irritating, and they had so much screen time. It just, you know, enough. It wasn't entertaining to me.
They did have some wonderful mullets. I'll give them that. Really nice.
I would have been looking for an orbital sander and take it to this guy's forehead. If I were Odo. I'm not a tattoo guy,
not a problem.
I'm trying to think of where else to go with this one. This is the second episode with the, I forget what his name is, the
Premen.
Star Trek what's that?
Premen, the security officer.
Yeah, Premen, and it's his second and his final episode. That's
yeah.
Was he there to replace O'Brien?
I guess. I think they brought him in there and they threw him against the wall to see if he'd stick.
No,
he didn't at all. But I think if he had shown a little bit of promise, they probably would have brought him back or worked him in again later. But there was really nothing going for him, so they ditched him pretty quickly. What else we got in this one? We did have Morn.
Mm-hmm. He was
there early on.
Yeah, I've got him about 5:56 minutes into the show, so he was then. I think you actually saw him from the front, so you actually saw Morn, and it wasn't like a blink and you miss him. So Morn was in the show again. Yeah, I'm sorry, Andy. You know, I don't have much to say about this one.
I'm probably defending this far more than it deserves, because it isn't good. Don't take me wrong. I don't think this is a good episode, just like I wouldn't hold up Spock's brain as being a good episode of the original. I just don't think either Spock's brain or this one are as bad as everyone says they are. I think there's some enjoyment to be had in both of those shows. Well, I prefer this to The Passenger.
Oh, okay. Well, interesting. This may be where, you know, again, this is where our disagreements may come up. So I don't have a problem. Yeah, but I will agree with you. A lot of times we see these rankings online or in entertainment magazines about, oh, the best episodes and the worst episodes. And I agree with you. Spock's brain, not a good episode, but there are some enjoyable parts in it. This episode, it's a little bit more difficult for me to find the enjoyable parts in it. And maybe it's because I look at the, you know, the fact that they're at the end of the show, that there was really no drama or there was no threat to any of the characters here. And that was what was carrying on the episode, to find out that at the very end that the command team was in no way threatened by all this. So
that's a huge plot mistake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no threat to the characters in this show at all. So essentially, there's no drama. Mm-hmm. It's only because Quark and Odo assume that there's a threat to the characters. If they'd have actually said, so do they die if I do this wrong? And the Alamarain guy, Fallow or whatever, had said, no, it's just a game. Then the episode would have been over, essentially, because Quark would have said, right, well, I'm not playing then.
Or if he would have been just sort of sly and given him a kind of interesting look to make him think that there might be some danger to the characters, then that would have worked even better. But the fact that at the end of it, it's like, oh, it was all just a game. That's all we're here to play. Ha 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 ha. Sorry, we kidnapped your command crew. You know,
it felt like they were trying to do an episode of The Twilight Zone and putting the DS9 crew into it.
Hmm.
And I didn't think that worked. I thought, I'm trying to remember. I think there's an episode of Twilight Zone called Five Characters in Search of an Exit.
In Search of an Exit, yeah.
And that's like that title could fit this one.
That's pretty good. Yeah, except that Twilight Zone episode was well written.
Yeah, that was just more mystery than science fiction-y. I trying to come up with some positives on things. I liked when Kira defied Sisko and said, "Fine, court-martial me." And he was like, "Well, I can't. You're not Starfleet." I liked the fact that they explained their relationship, and what they can and can't do.
Yeah, I think this one would have worked much better if we'd have had a William Shatner. The thing with Spock's brain is Shatner's clearly not taking it seriously, so that gives the audience some enjoyment. If they'd have let Nana Visitor do that role, essentially just blunder through it going, "This is stupid, this is dumb, I do not want to be any part of this," that would have been better. But instead of that, you don't really see a lot of her when they're down in the caves, to be honest with you. Some of the direction doesn't seem to have as many close-ups as it should be. And one of the directing things that, again, my wife pointed out when we were watching it, when you've got the upshot of them all stood on the ledge that's supposed to signify that they're, you know, miles and miles and miles into the air when they just stood on a ledge. The shot of Dax's uniform, Angela looked at that and said, "There's not a lot of room for her to move in that uniform, is there?" Given how tight it was around the crotchal and belly area.
So that's also a bonus for this episode. So yeah, you can go back and rewatch. Yeah, rock climbing isn't quite that bad, you know, having the upshot.
For fear of bringing up a point that's going to get more email, and hopefully we don't, but no boob window, though.
No, but yeah. But the Starfleet uniforms are a lot tighter on the women than they are on the men, which in the case of Kira, I don't really have a problem with, because it's not a Starfleet uniform.
She eventually makes her way into the Starfleet uniform, though.
She does.
Another positive that I'll say, I'll give this a positive. I was really excited when the little energy ball things, supposedly killed Bashir in the game. I thought that was a wonderful thing. I was like, great, maybe he's actually gone. Let's hear it for Quark playing the game badly. But unfortunately, no, he came back. So.
Yeah, well, that had the feeling of a TOS moment, you know, with McCoy being killed off and then just showing up at the end with two women on, you know, a woman on each arm.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1960s, that was fine. But by the time this show came around, I thought the tone of the show had become more serious than that. I don't think it lent itself to the "no, we didn't really kill him" kind of moment.
Yeah, I think our expectations of future episodes are kind of tainting our view of this. I can see where you're coming from, Andy. If we were allowed to have this be a sort of goofy one-off, like original series episode, like Plato's Stepchildren or Spock's Brain or whatever, and viewed it without the foreknowledge of what's going to come next from this, it probably could have been more enjoyable. So, yeah, I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to finish this up, or do we have anything else to say? Do you want to give our ratings?
We can wrap it up, but I think the fact that we're comparing it to Spock's Brain and Plato's Stepchildren, as opposed to, say, Balance of Terror or City on the Edge of Forever, I think that kind of says it all.
Yeah, this is definitely no Jaws.
As whenever I think of this episode, in my brain I hear Sisko singing that Alamarain line in that very, very low sing-song voice. And it's the only moment off the top of my head that I can think of where Sisko annoyed me.
Yeah, probably annoyed Avery Brooks as well.
I will, this is a reference to Doctor Who. I liked it better when the whole Alamarain thing with them skipping across the thing was done in the Five Doctors with the pseudo William Hartnell Doctor chasing the Master across the chessboard. I thought that was more interesting, but that's crossing the streams there. I'll go ahead and give it my
rank. Because we never tangent off at all.
No, at all. I'll go ahead and give it a rank. For me, this is a one episode. this is not a good... this is... like I said, I think if we could view the entirety of Deep Space Nine through the filter of having episodes that are kind of one-off and goofy, that would be fine. But when I think of one-off and goofy episodes, I'm brought to the to mind the Trials and Tribulations episode.
Oh, the one where Sisko's playing baseball, which is an awful lot of fun.
Oh, the seventh season where he's playing against the Vulcan team?
Yes.
Yeah, those were actually really good. This one, not so much. So this is a one for me. This might be the one of this season that's my lowest ranked. So,
and again, I'm going to just kind of follow suit a little bit. I gave Culis a 1. I gave The Passenger a 1.5. And this might be the episode that I'm just... the way I'm thinking about it is... I enjoy this one as little as I enjoy those two. And I'm torn between a 1 or a 1.5. And honestly, this one just left me with a level of irritation at certain moments. So I got to go with the 1 on it.
All right.
You're both mad. This is a 4.
At least you didn't give it a 5.
Get off.
No, I'm clearly kidding. It's I'm going to give it the same amount I gave The Passengers. I'm going to give it a 1.5. Even though I enjoyed this more than The Passenger, which we covered last week, it's not good. I feel like I've been put into the role of defending it, even though I don't think it's that good, simply because I don't think it's that bad. That's not me saying by any stretch of an imagination that this is an underrated episode, that this is an undiscovered gem. It's dumb as hell, but I don't think it's as bad an episode as certain others. Just because it's dumb doesn't make it not fun in places.
Okay. Well,
that's the problem, is I didn't think it was fun.
No, you didn't think it was fun at all, which is fair enough. But I'm going to go with 1.5.
I'm quoting Billy Crystal when he was interviewed by Baba Booey for Howard Stern. And he turns and he says, "You tell Howard, it's not fun and it's not funny." And that was it. And I don't know why, but that line always sticks with me.
We did mention the Morn sighting. So there was a Morn sighting in the show. We did mention that because I'm trying to make sure that we keep that straight in the episode. So, yeah, Morn was in this one as well. Do we want to head to emails?
Yeah, okay.
Please.
Incoming transmission.
Okay.
Let's get off this episode.
Okay. Do you want me to...
I guess I'll take the first one this time around.
Sure, go ahead.
And it's...
Do you want to merge it into... Do you want to merge those two into one, then?
Yeah, we'll just go ahead and do both of them.
So this is from Paul in Greensboro, who I don't know off the top of my head, but hello, Paul, and welcome to the show.
It's nice to have somebody who's not part of our incestuous relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, someone from outside the podcasting community. Thanks.
He may be part of the Facebook group, but I just don't know Paul off the top of my head, that's all. Here are my 2 cents on Boobgate. I never got the impression that Lursa and Betor were actual warriors. They're from a corrupt house that worked with Romulans to undermine the Empire. They started a civil war, again, with Romulan help. They're lousy Klingons. So the fact that they wear unwarrior-like clothes should be no surprise. To me, they seem like the types who shoot people in the back, in the dark, from far away. Or better yet, get an underling to do it for them. They're schemers, not fighters. They got by on the prestige of their house, not their personal martial prowess. As much as Klingons harp about honor, they've demonstrated that dishonorable political intrigue can get you quite far in the Empire. If the Dora sisters don't dress like real Klingon warriors, it's because they ain't real Klingon warriors. I can't argue.
Actually, Paul, I'm going to give you that. That's a very good point.
Yes, that completely makes sense. These are not stereotypical Klingons. So that's why they don't dress. They don't feel that they need to dress in the way that a true Klingon warrior would. So that's, yeah, good. Good on you.
Yeah, it's a very good, very strong point. And yes, boobs are awesome. But the foreheads, the teeth, sorry, those gals are not appealing to me. Even less so when you factor in their personalities. Like, once again, Paul, I cannot argue with that.
Yeah, well,
no, I can only think that the teeth would cause problems in certain acts, yes.
Yeah.
I remember liking Captive Pursuit when it first aired and have enjoyed it on repeated viewings too. I don't know what that is. IIRC?
If I recall correctly. Yeah.
Okay. If I recall correctly, I originally watched it with some friends in college, and we all thought it was a sign that DS9 was starting to get good, or at least beginning to deliver on the potential of the shortcut to the Gamma Quadrant. I wouldn't be too surprised if the writers had already decided that Odo's race was from the Gamma Quadrant. I would think so, actually. And that Odo had traveled to Bajor through the wormhole. But I kind of doubt that they'd already worked out the whole business with the Founders and the Dominion. Again, I'm agreeing with Paul on all of this.
Yeah, Iris Steve says they pretty much made the show up as they went along.
Yeah, but I'm thinking his character Bible when they started probably said that he was from that quadrant and that he, whatever reason that we haven't figured out yet, doesn't have his memory. Mm-hmm. It's easier for me to imagine that as the show progressed, they saw the need for a big bad, then recognized the dramatic potential of connecting Odo's origins to it. But that's just my speculation, of course. Thanks for the fun show, Paul in Greensboro. Paul went on with a second letter to follow that up and said, another thing, I like your talk about the Prime Directive. It does vary hugely across varying stories. There's the ethical version where the Federation doesn't intervene in the affairs of non-spacefaring species because they don't want to unduly influence those species. They want to allow those species to continue to make their own choices rather than be directed by the Federation, which, as a gigantic culture with relatively advanced tech, would surely dominate and subsume the newer, smaller culture. There's also the pragmatic aspect that says, don't get involved in other cultures' civil wars and the like, because who knows what kind of mess it will lead to. Then there's the fun...
I'm sorry, I thought that line was very snarky and very funny.
Are you thinking
my apologies
on that?
If Paul didn't mean it that way.
Then
yeah,
there's
what's the worst that could happen if we interfere in somebody else's war?
Are you thinking real life or are you thinking Captain Kirk?
Both.
Then there's the fundamentalist version, where the idea of a species' natural evolution path is understood as a literal provincial plan where we mortals have no right to muck with. We see it in that episode of Enterprise in which the captain decides he has to withhold medicine from an alien species and let them die out because a new, more evolved race of that species has appeared, and this new one is supposed to take over. Because evolution appeared to him in a dream and told him what its divine will was, I guess. Or in the latest movie, Kirk and Spock get into trouble for saving those aliens from a volcano that would have wiped them out because apparently that was messing with the designs of natural evolution. Evolution having a plan is a religious idea, no matter how much sciencey words you use to describe it. Placing more value on that imagined plan than on sentient life is effectively human sacrifice, which puts Prime Directive fundamentalism among the most egregiously unenlightened regions. Sorry. Thanks again, Paul in Greensboro. Paul sounds like he could teach a college course on the Prime Directive.
There's some fascinating ideas in there, isn't there? Because my interpretation of the Prime Directive is always, if we can help somebody, it is our moral obligation to do so. If we accept that in Star Trek's future, we have all evolved this higher state of consciousness where we're not petty beings anymore, and we can put aside whatever disagreements we may have politically, religiously, whatever, and if a planet or a people is in trouble and we are in a position to help them, it's our duty to do that. That's my interpretation of the Prime Directive. But there is every single show and every single captain and every single episode within that captain's show interprets the Prime Directive differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree with him about the Interdarkness thing. I think if you can stop a volcano from blowing up and stopping the culture from being wiped out, you should do it. And if you can do it without them knowing that you're there.
I think the biggest issue is that they let themselves be seen.
Yeah. Well, that's an episode of Next Gen as well, isn't it? Who Watches the Watchers is all about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they also did that sort of in Insurrection as well. It's the entire idea of, you know, does our observation or does our meddling with these species, what does it do to the future? Are these aliens from Into Darkness, since they saved them, are they going to, you know, turn the Federation ships into sort of godlike chariots of the gods, essentially. And then eventually, come 100 years, 1,000 years from now, they're going to be the next space Hitler. Is this evolution, that's the entire... That falls on the side of completely being devoid of helping all this, because this is what might happen, versus the idea of doing what's morally right and saving lives. And it's difficult that they can't give a specific idea of what the prime directive is, but I think the fact that it is sort of loosey-goosey like that allows for these interesting stories to be told with the prime directive.
Yeah, the prime directive in the Starfleet handbook should basically be the prime directive, rule one, do no harm. And that's it. Mm-hmm. But like you say, you don't know what you're helping this company, this culture can mean to them in the future. The Next Generation did a lot of really interesting episodes about that. DS9 doesn't really bother too much because they're not out there exploring.
Mm-hmm. And I would have to agree with you. If we are considering the Federation as a whole as a good and moral organization or military organization or whatever, then the idea should be specifically do no harm. The whole idea of not getting involved is something that should be up to the commanding officer or the person in charge of doing whatever necessary with first contact. So yeah, if that would be the prime directive, I think that would probably work a lot better, and you could still have allowances for people to do various things, being more hands off or whatever.
Well, one of the best prime directive stories in the original series, In a Private Little War, were the this is a really interesting story. The Klingons have involved themselves in a civil war between two cultures that ostensibly the Klingons and the Federation have no say in what goes on. But the Klingons are arming one side of this civil war because it benefits them for this one side to gain the balance of power in that area. So Kirk is sent by the Federation to arm the other side in the Civil War to bring them up to the same level as the Klingons, because the Federation can't let the Klingon side gain a foothold in that area of space, because it will give the Klingons more say in what goes on in that particular region. And even by the end of the episode, you've got a wonderful scene with Kirk and McCoy, where McCoy said, "So we're arming them then?" And Kirk says, "Yeah, but I don't know if it's the right thing that we're doing, but that's what we're doing." And he never attempts to answer the question as whether he's doing the right thing. It's a really wonderful episode for the 1960s to actually address that. Is Kirk right here in what he's doing? And even he doesn't know. It's a brilliant show, Private Little War. It's very underrated.
Very much so. Okay.
Yeah, I think the Prime Directive... You could have a podcast on the Prime Directive and just sit and discuss different scenarios week after week after week and go on with it, just because it is such a undefined area, really. They don't really ever make it clear exactly what it's all about, and the rules do seem to vary as time goes on. I like the fact that
you'd all be right and you'd all be wrong at the same time.
Yeah, but as affects this particular show, I think the fact that Sisko's kind of out on his own a little bit and making some decisions by the seat of his pants kind of plays into it a little bit. Now, I mean, that kind of presupposes that he's not in constant contact with Starfleet, that he doesn't have the ability to talk to them about things, which is false. But I still think there's a lot of kind of frontier justice going on, and the Prime Directive isn't really too much in Sisko's mind when he's making decisions here.
Well, and it's also the fact that the Deep Space Nine is not a Federation outpost. If this were one of those typical, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4 star bases that we've seen from the movie, then you could say that Sisko would be more beholden to specifically following the Prime Directive. However, since this is a Bajoran outpost, the Bajor is not a member of the Federation, he has to apply it a bit more liberally. He can't really follow the direct line of the of the Prime Directive. So but as always, the Prime Directive should be used to tell good stories, and you know, it's done well. Like I said, in Captain Pursuit, I thought it was done well.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay. Oh, we've got one more email. Do you want me to take that, Andy, or do you want to do it? It's short.
Nah, you do it.
Okay. This one is from Timothy Elliott, and it's entitled Not Spam, Thank You. Listen to the Prophets number 5, or I guess we can all get along. And Timothy writes, the three of you are so agreeable, you would be at home on the bridge of the Enterprise D. I guess obviously he wrote this before we did our last two episodes, because there was some disagreement there. He says,
that would have been in response to Captive Pursuit, and I'm just looking at our ratings on that. Sean and Andy, you both gave it a 3.5, and I gave it a 3.
Yeah, so, well, you know, there's variations in our ratings, so we're all agreeable, we all enjoy the show, but we enjoy the show to differentiating. I wish I could speak this really different levels. So there you go. But he says he loves the podcast, and thanks, Tim, for writing in. Really appreciate it. In fact, thanks for everyone writing in. If you'd like to write into the show, the email address, I don't think I promoted this at the end of the last episode, is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. That's listentotheprophets@gmail.com. Okay. Well, I guess that wraps this episode up, which is good, because I want to wrap this up and throw it in. I'll throw it down that well that Sisko, Akira, and Dax fell into. Because
Alamarain!
Andy, next time, what do we have?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, the Grand Nagus shows up, which can only mean trouble for Quark.
I can't wait.
Inconceivable!
Are you crossing the streams, dude?
Exactly. All right, everyone.
You've defeated my giant!
I'm afraid you do not know what that word means.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
That's the title of the next episode, dude. Alamarain.
That works.
This one's going to be called Was Iggy Pop.
All right.
That works, because Iggy Pop is in an episode of the next Deep Space Nine.
I vaguely remember that, but...
Did he play a founder? Am I thinking right? Because I remember seeing... not a founder, but... what is it? Their little... minions. What was his name? The guy from... Yeah, like Wayoon. Was that who Iggy Pop played? I don't
It's hard to believe that that's the same guy from Homeland.
Mandy Patinkin?
Yeah.
See, I haven't watched all that much of Homeland. My wife watches, what's the show? Criminal Minds? And he was on, like, the first couple of seasons of that until, not Andy Garcia, but Joe Mantegna came on to that. But, yeah, the Mandy Patinkin was great in that role. I will never, and supposedly he didn't, but neither he nor Cary Elwes really specifically knew how to fence that well. But that is perhaps one of the best sword fight scenes in any, maybe not in any movie, but in any recent movie.